This week in Time magazine, some of you have seen it, no doubt, the decade from hell. As if to prove it, they choose the devil's colors, black and red. The decade is otherwise nameless. Nobody seems to have found out a way to call it. But they give ample reason in this brief essay for the case of the decade from hell. It's an easy case to make. The span began with that strange foreboding that all of our computers were going to fail at once on December 31st at midnight. But no, instead our dream failed. Not at midnight, but in the days and years that followed. Having slept for a generation through what was called mourning in America some 30 years ago almost, we stumbled into the consequences of our neglect for our democracy, neglect for our energy use, for our international relations, for our finances, for our infrastructure, for our personal health, for our national health, neglect and its consequences. We have ignored the counsel, watch at all times, as Jesus has it in the reading we heard this morning, watch at all times, praying that we may have strength to escape all these things that will take place. Whether we're now awake, I don't know. But I know the spirit of Advent, which begins today and always begins this way: awake, lest that day come upon you suddenly like a snare. Does the warning work? To what end, you might say? Work to what end? Advent probably does work well as the dread warning to our inner Santa that only some 20 days are left before that day comes, right? That day that will fall upon us like a snare. Christmas. Are we supposed to save the American economy in the next 20-some days to boot? Now, we may wring our hands about the Christ missed in Christmas and the like, but if we think about Advent as a special time of waiting, that's what the word means, what are we waiting for? Christmas Day? Why? Does Christ come on Christmas Day? So many carols say just that. But if so, in what sense does Christ come uniquely on Christmas Day? Too often, you know, religion and its rituals, by using this lofty language, simply swaddle Jesus' arms so that we don't have to deal with him at all. He's just a cute little baby. And the image of Jesus with hands outstretched for us, for the world, on the cross. Not the swaddled baby. If Advent works us toward the holy day only in a timid sense, bringing us to a kind of annual compassion for the homeless, say, well, such annuals are hardly worth waiting for. Frankly, the lack of a serious answer to the question, what are we waiting for, is enough to drive reasonable minds from the Christian religion as surely as a boy of a certain age feels driven from his mother's embrace. To understand how to wait for Christ's coming, you have to put away childish things, as we've said a couple times. You have to come home again as an adult. But not every adult in the churches or out has gone through this process. For hundreds of millions of human beings through thousands of years, the annual cycle of New Year festivals, basically that's what we're in already here, this annual cycle of New Year festivals has had the function to break time down from its immense expanse into little pieces that we can deal with, little pieces that are stripped of more weight than can fit into 12 months and the sorrows thereof. Among a number of other stratagems, these ever-returning festivals are, in a word offered by Mircea Eliade in his marvelous book, How Man Has Tolerated History. That's what these festivals are about, he says. How man has tolerated history. Since the dawn of civilization, the error and the oppression and the injustice and the destruction that run across all our lives personally and across our corporate lives, all of that has presented a problem to consciousness, which is, how can we bear it? Who is responsible for all this, anyway, this decade from hell? Is it this the gods, some traditions say? It's the stars, other traditions say. No, it's fate, another has it. All of this coming then to the rebirth of the gods, those traditions, Christianity may get drawn into the force of that idea, the coming to birth again of the gods as the winter sun tarries long in darkness. This is a glad assertion that what is past is done and we get to start over again with a kind of a clear conscience, if we can believe in the revels. In this worldview, this is Mircea Eliade's great point, in this worldview there is no history. Not really. Nothing adds up. Nothing is ever new, really. You start over and continue into the new cycle, pretty much expecting the same as from the last. The reveler is not in control, doesn't expect to take responsibility. In such an annual festival, then, the question is, what are we waiting for? We're waiting for a symbolic, altogether now, release from our sins. That's how it works. For very many people in the West, Advent and Christmas, as we suggest, have been sucked into this ancient pattern of non-history. They have been pressed into duty alongside other tasks, again, Eliade's phrase, of abolishing history from the mind so that one not feel hopelessness in the face of those heartless powers out there. Is this a Christian way in the dark? I say, I hope you say, absolutely not. But here's a twist. In the centuries before and after Jesus' birth, many religions all across the world, Eliade again, what a researcher, many religions and cultures embraced a different solution to the burden of history. They imagined not this endless cycle phenomena, which can be found widely, and which has nothing new introduced to it. They imagined rather a cataclysmic conclusion to history, a one great new thing, a purifying fire come down to punish the wicked and to reward the righteous. How much more bearable are the present evils if it's thought that they are hardly real in comparison with the judgment soon to fall? This also is anti-historical. Nothing really new has to happen. The evil can continue. The importance of the experience of the consequence of human choices is set at zero in that apocalyptic vision embraced by so many, and by so many Christians. History means nothing, personal, political, not in the long run. During this last generation of sleep in America, not a few of our political leaders have claimed to embrace this view that Jesus is coming soon to draw this age to a close. You know, we pride ourselves as Americans in tolerating all kinds of people's religious beliefs. That's something important. But why have we let anyone take the wheel who thinks that both the car and the road are meaningless? The reading that we heard this morning, dark warning in the voice of Jesus. There is another one like it in Mark's gospel, another in Matthew's. That reading places Jesus squarely inside the anti-historical worldview of a coming apocalypse. Now, I used to resist the possibility that Jesus had such confounding ignorance in him. I blamed it on the early church. You can always do that, you know. Oh, the early church. They wrote that and put it in his mouth. Maybe they did. I don't know. But I didn't want my Jesus mixed up with ignorance of that sort, whether ancient or fundamentalist. I don't care. I don't want him thinking like that. But I am reminded soberly that Jesus was a man. Ancient cultures, including those of Israel and certainly of the early church, did embrace this method for lifting the burden of terror imposed by an awareness of evil in history. It's a coping mechanism, right? Hearing those doleful warnings on the first Sunday in Advent, we may cringe to be found in the company of believers who think that such kind of salvation or rescue from bad storms, bad policies, bad men is coming, a kind of salvation in purifying fire from power utterly outside of human history and human freedom. We may cringe to be found in like company. Is that what we're supposed to be waiting for in Advent? We want none of that. I may not be speaking for you, I realize. I want none of that. And as I say, reasonable minds will flee from religion that is so opposed to the possibility of real human freedom. It is one of the reasons of the dwindling of the church throughout the 20th century. But let's be sober about our strengths and our weaknesses. We may say that we love our freedom. We do say that. But quoting from the warning of Jesus in the words from this morning, our hearts are easily weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and cares of this life. They really are. And these dull our use of freedom. Is there a way to wait that lies between the rock of apocalypse and the hard place of annual revels intended to keep us drunk and mindless about oppression and evil in our world? If so, what has Jesus got to do with that? There is a third way. We might call it by several names. All of these are intended as synonyms. The way of historical conscience. The way of choice and responsibility, which can introduce genuine new reality into the stream of life. The way of accepting our fallenness, our sin. The way of seeing that our choices have consequences, not all good. The way of faith. The way of Abraham and Sarah, who hear that divine call to go to a far country and do a wide new thing. It is the way of Jacob, that errant grandson who says, "What's religion got to do with me?" And then who is on lam from his older brother and from his older addictions, and discovers in the night of his despair on a stony pillow a dream, a ladder reaching from him to heaven. And he says, here, here in the middle of my flight, God is in this place. And I did not know it. These are names for the third way. My heart has taught me that if Jesus sometimes placed his hope in an anti-historical worldview, it doesn't really matter, because that is not what he made his life stand on. The portrait of Jesus living and dying is actually quite explicitly historical. It is the work of inspired historical faith, like these other heroes we named, faith that in his own choosing now and now and now, how to live, how to love, how to die, he, by the grace of God, might bring into the stream of life a new good thing, that new good thing God most sought of him in his moment. That is his story. I don't know about his little apocalypse. If the man Jesus lived between the ages, sorting out belief in fate on the one hand and trust in faith on the other, well, so do I. So do you. Tempted by revels later this month to dull our mind, and drawn again and again by Advent promise to wake up. Is this not how we wake, how we rise from the stones of our griefs, our addictions, our fears that nothing we do really matters? When we say with Paul that you, O church, I mean you, however many you are right now, you are the body of Christ and individually members of him, do we not mean therefore to stand before the Son of Man now and take again the authority and the confidence to choose to bring forth our eye, our wisdom, our hope, our demand for justice, our compassion and our sacrifice, our whole true self, brought into the stream, the fabric of history being made new now? Are we not committing ourselves to become historical men and women? This is what resurrection is all about, as I feel it. Many say they can make the new just fine without God. Many churchgoers have no interest in bringing anything new to mind. They want these rituals to dull their thoughts about this world. Many people, frankly, are just trying to live their lives, thank you. I have no quarrel with any of them. I want no quarrel. There's no time to quarrel with any way that others sort out their lives. It's too difficult. But you are here in this church now, at this time of year, at this time of history, in this city. To you, therefore, I declare, boldly take the Christian religion to your heart and mind and will. It is religion for those who do not blench from seeing ourselves as fallen, nested in errors from which we know not how to extricate ourselves. The very last sentence of Iliad's book calls Christianity a final abandonment of the archetypes of paradise and repetition. Come home. Learn to watch at all times for the possibility that God is drawing forth from you choice. Practice the silence that can enable you to respond to the new, not from your old thoughts, but from something universal God's Spirit is drawing forth from you. Find out what it means this season to wait upon the Lord, like that beautiful chant into which Harriet called us. Know also that you will stumble. But you know, you won't stumble unless the way that you are going is hard enough to make you stumble, worthy of the strength of Christ who is in you. Learn then to lean on your soul's friends. Become the coming church, a church whose purposes are ever more deeply woven into the fabric of history and community and compassion and change. This is what we are waiting for. This is what we're waiting for. Let us sing a little song to bind this hope to our heart. The whole lyric is found in your order of service.